Yo, how I work this shit?
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Zach Harper. We got a full squad today, folks. We got Trevon Edwards, we got Mo Dakhil, we got James Edwards III, and we got Jay King, and we've got...
Yeah, but...
Yo, how I work this shit?
Bruh. New York strip steak?
Ooh. This is the Basketball Buds.
Braised beef short ribs? Dang!
With Zach Harper and your favorite athletic writers.
Get mad at me, bro. I'm gone.
The Adelaide 36ers, early championship favorites. Let's discuss. Basketball Buzz Athletic NBA Show. I'm Jared Weiss, joined by Mo Dakhil, Dave Dufour, Clippers writer Law Murray. We've got Jade Hoy on production. And we're starting with the upset of the century here, Dave. Adelaide 36ers, they beat the Phoenix Suns 134-24. What the hell happened?
It's called basketball, man. Anybody can get caught on any given night. And for the record, the Suns were pretty good. Their starters only played 22 minutes. All those guys were plus 11, and they were trying stuff out. Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson initiating offense. And again, the Suns starters, plus 11. There's no alarm bells going off outside of the vibes, but it's basketball. This is why single elimination basketball is the most exciting sport on the planet, because any given night, you can get caught slipping. And the 36ers caught him. It was nice, man. It was fun.
If this was a regular season game, this isn't how this game plays out. Like, it's a whole thing, right? Like, we're having all this fun. It's great. It's fun for the Adelaide 36ers, all that stuff. But this is preseason basketball. Like, this is when you try out random stuff or whatever. Every team has different things going on in the preseason. Like, we're going too far nuts. I think part of it is just, you know, how badly the Suns looked in the last time we saw them play on the court. And then just now coming out and going like, oh, wow, the final outcome. They lost by 10 to a team that's in Australia. That's weird.
Okay, well, Mo, let's forget about the results because preseason doesn't count. What were the things that you thought were interesting from the way they were trying to change things up and experiment in this game?
I just think they're trying. I mean, this is the thing we talked about with Nerder with the Suns, is like the Suns need to change up how they play a little bit. And I think they're going to have to find guys in different roles. They're going to have to turn Bridges and stretches playmaking a little bit and things like that. I think they just got a different style right now with how they're going to go into the season. They can't go into next season playing exactly the way they played last year, because it's probably going to net the same result because the league has gotten better. So I think it's just them experimenting right now, and the stuff they're doing now, we might not even see Jared come regular season. You know, they're just throwing stuff right now at the wall and then playing all sorts of guys, you know, large numbers of minutes and just experimenting now.
I think if you were going to make a takeaway, it might be about their depth, but the first preseason game is maybe not the place to take that away. You can make a note of it, but I wouldn't be saying, well, the Suns have no depth. Not yet, but I'm watching it.
I don't, the depth is a problem though. I mean, Jay Crowder obviously did not play. He's not with the team right now. And I mean, the Suns, it's not like they played third and fourth stringers. Like, this was pretty much a first unit, second unit game. And to y'all point, like, the first unit was fine. But the second unit is, there are guys that are going to be in their rotation. And those were the guys getting smoked. I mean, Cameron Payne wasn't even the best Cameron Payne in the game. This dude, Craig Randall, was pulling up from 30 feet with a Cam Payne pitching his jump shot, man. Like, that's the craziest thing about it. Like, the Suns are an incomplete product right now, not just because of whatever psyche issues that's going on, which I got to say, Devin Booker, like, you don't need to be posting, you know, the LeBron, I'm going to go home to my family, John on Instagram. You know, we're tripping about this game, but now we got to wonder, right? So we know that the psyche is a little incomplete with Phoenix, but their roster is incomplete too. They're going to need to figure out what to deal with the Jay Crowder situation. And to your point, they're doing different things. I think the offense looked fine, but they might want to put that zone defense away. Like, that, some of the shots that they were giving up, I mean, this dude Craig Randall had already hit like six threes or something like that. They're playing this 3-2 and giving up penetration from the corner. Gets to the paint, gets to the other corner, swing that to a wide open shooter who, again, was already lighting you up. Stuff like that where it's like, all right, we can try something different, but here's the thing, so we need to not try again.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, just throw it out there. Just throw it out there. Let them throw the zone out just so they go like, hey, yeah, we can't play zone and things like that. I think there's going to be, you know, some of the stuff too. Look, Saric didn't play. That's a guy that's going to probably get minutes when he's ready to go and things like that. Like, they're going to have guys that are going to get minutes in the process. Some of it also is position battles. Let's see who's doing what and who can play and whatnot. I'm not a Cameron Payne guy. I know he had that breakout year that one year, and I think I worry about that being their backup point guard, and I get worried when they go, oh, but we're going to play Landry Shamet as a playmaker too. Like, I saw him as a Clipper not be able to bring the ball up the court on consecutive possessions. Like, that's not going to work. They have holes to fill. And I think that's probably why the Crowder thing's kind of weird in that scenario. And I think that's the stuff where it's like, all right, let's see what they end up getting for Crowder, if anything. But if they trade Crowder, they have to get something back, because the more incomplete roster is the bigger issue for this team than losing to the Adelaide Sixers first preseason game. And their guys didn't play major minutes.
Yeah, that second unit is to my eye, when I look at it and I watch them a little bit, it's missing a connector. It's missing a guy who can be that tertiary guy, catch and go, make a pass, make a read. And then the other thing I'm watching this season, and I watched it in this game, was I want to see the forcefulness of DeAndre Ayton. I thought that was pretty big from him last night. He had a couple of dunks. I think if you're tracking his dunks this season, I'm looking for an uptick, because that's where he can really show his force, because he's strong and athletic. The difference is he's got nice touch, so he goes to that little jump hook too often. And I want to see him finish and finish hard and make statements. I thought he did that a little bit last night. So there was some good stuff for Phoenix too. But yeah, that second unit really is missing a guy to just pull it all together.
And I think that's where they might just stagger minutes with guys. You know, and that's something they're not going to do in the preseason. That might be a time where Chris Paul goes to the bench early and comes in, or with the second unit, or Devin Booker or whatnot. Like, I think that's kind of where you would see that stuff. I mean, preseason, you're just, all right. Most important thing in preseason, don't get anybody important hurt.
Don't get hurt.
That's
get
the hurt. Most important thing.
Yeah. Get embarrassed by, you know, or whatever, but don't get hurt.
I was just going to go real quick, like another point to the depth with the Suns. Like, for some teams, that stuff matters more than other teams, obviously. And the thing that people need to remember about the Suns, yeah, this is one of the best teams over the last 2 years. And they had a 5-man unit that played more than almost anybody, like Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Bridges, Crowder, and Ayton. I mean, those guys were together on the floor a lot. They knew that it was the second most used 5-man lineup last year, and it was the most used 5-man lineup the year before when they were the 2 seed and went to the finals. So for some teams, them figuring out who their available guys are matters a little bit more. And we have to just understand we're probably going to see a different Phoenix Suns team just based off of that.
I'm honestly in shock that Mo remembered Dario Saric is there. I almost completely forgot that he existed.
There are teams where I remember some guys, and there are other teams. I keep forgetting Norman Powell's a Clipper. Like, it just, there's just random.
I've done that three times. Again, like, after this preseason.
Yeah, it just every now and then I look at another team, oh, crap, yeah, that guy's there. And then sometimes I pull some random ones.
I mean, you're going to have to forget some Clippers guard at some point. There's just too many of them. So I guess last thing with Phoenix, Mo, what do you think of Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges initiating? And could that be one way to bridge the gap with the offense?
I don't think that's something I want Cam Johnson doing. I want to see him, like, he needs to show he can be almost a Crowder-like person right now, because that's the role he's got to replace more than being that. Bridges, we saw him do a little bit more off the dribble last season and things like that. I'm not very high on, let's just make him a playmaker. I think that's a hard transition to do to get into it. If it's just bring the ball up the court and then give it to Chris Paul, sure, they can probably make that work. But if it's like, no, we expect him to create out of the pick and roll in the way at the levels of, like, or not at the level of Chris Paul, but a little lower than Chris and things like that, now I think you're asking too much of him. You know, he's in his fourth year now. Like, I think you're putting him in a tougher spot at this point, and you're putting him in a position to fail.
Well, and last night, to your point, Mo, they did have him do some playmaking. And he had 3 turnovers to 2 assists. Now, I will say one of those assists was actually pretty nice. It was a little nice little inside pocket pass. But basic stuff. If he can be a secondary guy on those bench units, like you mentioned before, staggering Chris Paul, having Shamet out there, his shooting is going to be big. But can he be the guy who catches off that initial pick and roll and does something else for other people? I've never seen that from him before. It'd be a weird guy to rest your season on. Let's just put it that way.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big juicy investment. Now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Well, let's move from one team trying not to appear to be a dumpster fire to one team that lives in the zone of dumpster fire, the Los Angeles Lakers. We had a really interesting story up on The Athletic with Shams Charania, Jovan Buha, and Sam Amick detailing... Really, what was interesting about it is how the evolution of the decision-making process for the Lakers and how it's expanded from what was initially just Rob Pelinka, Jeannie Buss, and senior basketball advisor Kurt Rambis, which is, I feel like, a pretty misleading name there. And it's including now Darvin Ham, Joey and Jesse Buss as well. It seems like the brain trust has really expanded, and this is all part of a story talking about what to do with Russell Westbrook. And they have seriously mulled over sending unprotected first-round picks in 27 and 29 to the Pacers for Miles Turner and Buddy Hield. Those are potentially insanely valuable picks for two good players, but those are the kind of picks you usually are looking to trade for a superstar for. So, Dave, you're nodding hardest at me as I'm talking, so I'm going to start with you. What did you think of just this evolution of the way the brain trust is working and the idea of getting Russ to somehow work here or move him for good but not great players?
I think it's safe to say that the brain trust hasn't been working previously. So making changes to the brain trust just makes sense. That's what good teams do. Hopefully more voices in the room equals, you know, a little bit more contention, but gets you to where you need to go faster. But really, they have nowhere to go if they're not going to move those picks. Those are the only two assets that have any value outside of LeBron and Anthony Davis. And I don't think either of those guys are going to be traded. So you're at a, you know, basically shit or get off the pot moment for the Lakers. Either trade the picks and say, hey, we're going to try to compete this year, or don't carry Russ through the season. Hope, you know, you do something. And then you're kicking the can down the road to next year, to year 21 for LeBron. It seems to me like the Lakers are getting a little bit of a pass for wasting a season of LeBron. And I don't know that another franchise would. But I guess get more voices in the room if they're going to get you to actually make moves that make your team better. I just don't see it happening. Those picks have too much value in 27 and 29. Like, LeBron might not even be in the league, much less a Laker. The Lakers could be awful by then. Those picks have a tremendous amount of value. So I think if you're the Lakers, I just don't know. I wouldn't know what to do in this situation. So I'm not surprised that they're also confused.
Don't sleep on the fact that he might want to play with his youngest child in the NBA, Dave.
So don't, he's trying to play with his grandkids, man.
He might be trying to play till he's 60. Don't sleep on that.
He probably could. You know, modern science is pretty incredible, guys.
It is remarkable that we're talking about a guy that's already been in the league for 20 years, and you're like, he may still be playing 7 years from now.
Yeah. It's doubtful. But the truth of the matter is, the story here to me from this piece is about Russ. And it's about, and because Mo brought this up in our little pre-show, it's about Russ and the buy-in. We've never heard that he's actually doing this stuff in practice. We've heard, okay, Russ might try to screen more for Kevin Durant. Russ is going to try to play off the ball more so Kevin Durant can, you know, initiate the offense and Russ can bend the offense. Oh, well, now Kevin Durant's not there anymore. Well, we're going to get Russ off ball and see if he can attack and create opportunities for other people that way. It just never happened. What did we see when he went to Houston? I mean, it's just we need to see it in actual games, but the reports from practice, Mo, that's good.
The best Russ looked last year, it was in one game. I think it was against Memphis. He was a screener. Screen for LeBron, roll to the rim, you know, let him be a short roll guy, things like that. He really did not set a screen after that, it felt like, in that game. After that game, like, I don't feel like he set a screen again. I think he set eight that game. And after that, no more. If it was, it was completely by accident, and he just happened to ran into the defender. But the reports out of the from Shams from the camp, from the Lakers right now is, hey, like Russ is setting the screens. He's doing all the small things. He's pushing the tempo, looking to get other people set up before himself. All of those types of things are good. That's the way the Lakers can make it work. But the one thing too is I find interesting is the Lakers are saying like, yeah, we're going to try to make it work with Russ. But at the same time, we're not going to make the trade with Indiana because part of it is they think, hey, something better might come along the line. Because you said it, Dave, those picks might be really valuable. 27 and 29, Lakers could be really bad towards the end of this decade, all of that. So maybe you wait because let's just go back a year. Last October, at this time, we were thinking, wow, the Nets might win a championship. Everything's good with those guys. You know, their big three, all that stuff is going well. Everything changes in the league so incredibly quickly. And in-season moves can happen. So maybe the smart thing for them is, hey, we don't think Miles Turner and Buddy Hield is going to get us to the point where we feel like, hey, we're going to win a championship this year in the LeBron year. Let's wait and not fire off our one real asset we have is these two picks. Let's not fire those off and then find out later, like, yo, Dame demands a trade or whatever. I'm just throwing out a name before Portland gets all riled up.
Well, they have the Knicks strategy, right? Like, if they hang on to these picks, Law, they hang on to these picks, and Bradley Beal is like, you know what? I want out. There's your move. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it is the smarter move to wait.
I think the interesting thing about the Lakers now is they obviously missed the playoffs. They had a humiliating year last year. The bravado that all those guys came into the 2020-21 season with, the 2021-22 season with, I got to flip my calendar. Sorry about that. Is not present here. Like, humility does some things to a player. And I think that's the case with not just Russell Westbrook, but, LeBron and AD, they know this too. With AD, he's talking about shooting better. He's talking about trying to show his durability. With LeBron, is like, obviously we're talking about how he doesn't have time to waste. This is about to be year 20. LeBron's been through this with the Lakers before with a new head coach and turning a year that was tumultuous, his first year in LA, to a year where even before the bubble, they're obviously the best team in the Western Conference. And then they wound up being the last team standing in the bubble. The key difference in my assessment between that first year with Frank Vogel and this first year coming up with Darvin Ham is the fact that we're still talking about Russell Westbrook possibly being moved. That 19-20 Lakers team, partly because they couldn't make a move, not that they were not interested. They wanted Marcus Morris. He went to the Clippers. But that Lakers team, their team was their team. They eliminated the distractions. They played hard. They played together after a previous year where it was LeBron's going to trade you. Well, we're getting kind of a split here where it's like on one hand, Darvin's trying to act like Russ is going to be on the team. He's doing his job. And I think there's some trust and buy-in that obviously wasn't present with Russell Westbrook and Frank Vogel this time last year. And that tanked Frank Vogel's tenure with the Lakers. But on the other hand, you're still talking about the Lakers could still do something. And guess what? They still could. If the Lakers get off to a kind of mid start, then obviously they're going to look to revisit trying to trade Russ or trying to do something. If the Lakers get off to a great start, then we'll see how that changes things. It's probably not going to be as eager to make moves, but or the Russell Westbrook move, but they can make another move thinking that, okay, let's cash some chips in those two first round picks per se. So that's the interesting thing here. It's like You're trying to build a new kind of team. You're trying to eliminate all the BS that went down last year, but there's still going to be some BS hanging because you got Russ in a contract year and these two first round picks with a guy in LeBron who's openly F them picks.
Here's the thing, guys. If Russ is going to buy in on defense, and he's a tremendous athlete. He has the tools. I mean, he has shown flashes of being a good defensive playmaker, but it's the bad decision-making, it's the gambling, right? If he can just rein that in, could he not also be a devastating small ball five like Bruce Brown if he was willing to commit to screening, rolling hard, catching lobs, getting to the corner, attacking off the catch? I mean, Russell Westbrook is legitimately one of the greatest basketball players to ever play in the NBA. It would just... I would love to see what this guy could be at this point in his career if he just said, okay, I'm not, you know, 25-year-old Russell Westbrook, who is this dynamic force of nature that's just able to will himself to the basket and will points on the board. I now have to find other ways to make a contribution, and I have other better players around me. How can I go to being the best role player in the league? I mean, he has the tools.
I'll tell you why he can't be a small ball five, at least not on this team. They don't have shooting. They don't have shooting. It's that simple. It's honestly, like, the guys they went and got this offseason, all right, they're nice and stuff. Let them shoot. Like, other teams are just going to let them shoot. It's not really something you're going to worry about all that much. You know, yeah, Patrick Beverley's improved as a shooter. Okay, fine. You know, Dennis Schroeder, all right, whatever. But it's like, it's a point where you're not going to be able to play him as a small ball five with the lineups that they have. You know, and when they're looking at their starting lineup that they're talking about, with Russ, Kendrick Nunn,
Damian LeBron, Jones,
AD, and Damian Jones, and
Russ is their 3-and-D guy.
I mean, you're just looking at it going like, one, I don't think this team is going to defend at a level that they need to. They can. I mean, and will Russ be able to do that the whole way through a season? And then two, they just don't have shooting. They don't have shooting, and it's not, and it's going to be a crowded paint for those guys, you know. And I think that's the challenge that you're going to run into. And I think, you know, yeah, the idea of him being a small ball five would be interesting, but this isn't the team to do it on because you don't have the pieces to play any small ball five.
And honestly, the biggest shortcoming for him as a small ball five is defensive positioning. Like, if you're going to do that, you got to have great awareness. You got to be in the right spots, putting in the work to get there. I feel like that's the opposite of how Russ has been playing defense. Since he got
he can only do it on the offensive end. Yeah. You can't have him in the paint on defense. I mean, especially if he's playing with Anthony Davis or LeBron. I mean, that's two of the best backside help rim protectors in the league when healthy. And so you wouldn't take them out of that.
And when engaged. LeBron definitely has time where he's like, I'm not interested.
When engaged is for pretty much everyone on that team right now, it seems.
LeBron's very good when he's not engaged, though, at pointing out the guy that should have, you know, hustled harder to help him out. So, but Russ is not that guy on the defensive end. But I do think, I'm just forever going to hold out hope because Russell Westbrook, when he's doing Russ stuff, is just one of my favorite guys to watch. He's just insane in a good way. And so I hope it's a good season. I hope the Lakers figure it out. I hope they're surprisingly good. I just don't expect it.
I'll just leave this with one quote that was in that story from Russell Westbrook. My job is to be professional, show up to work. If it just stopped there, we'd feel optimistic. But then he says, Like I've always effing done.
Oh, man. That's the problem.
Never change, Russ. Never change.
It's a defiance for me, man. This is going to be a fascinating season.
Tyler Hero, a well-paid man. 4-year deal up to $130 million with unlikely incentives. La Murray, is it too much?
I don't think it's too much because... here's the thing. Miami has to have some guys who are going to take them into whatever their next era is. Like, and I feel like they're a thin team. I feel like they're a team that, even though they had success last year, went to the finals 2 years ago, they're still looking at, like, who's going to replace PJ Tucker. They didn't get anybody there. What's happening with Duncan Robinson, the last guy they paid, and obviously he didn't. He didn't finish the season in the rotation. Kyle Lowry is kind of like on the spot. So you wonder if he's going to finish his contract in Miami. So with Tyler, he's shown that he can get a bucket. He won a six-man of the year off of that. Just a score. some playmaking chops. They wanted him to play point guard. I think it was 2 years ago after his rookie year. It didn't work out. Maybe he gets more opportunities to be a playmaker. But, I mean, he's just he's so young and he's so talented. And when you're a good team, it's good when you strike when you're in the playoffs, because naturally you're not going to get those lottery tickets all the time. So it's nice that they have him. It's nice that they have Bam. And we're going to see how Tyler continues to improve his game, but it's good business for Miami to lock him up.
Also, I think people need to start on getting to grips here that the cap's going to go up significantly in the next few years. And it's, you know, the sticker shock that we're going to have on some of these contracts now, these are going to look like bargains. You know,
this might just be six man money, Mom.
No, I mean, seriously, like, it's going to be one of those things. We're going to look at it and be like, yo, John Morant might get $70 million a year. I'm just whatever, you know, like when the next contract's up and everything. Like, I think this is a smart move from them. And as Law said, you got to kind of just tie him down to at least have him under contract. And it's not a situation where also, like, you can move him for a piece. You know, at some point, if he blows up this year, that's a good contract number. That's a good piece that you can trade and get something back, you know, and a little bit not as challenging for that. I'm not saying that's what Miami did, but at the end of the day, like, I think that's a fair deal for Hero in Miami.
I'm a little bit more interested in what it says about his role this season, though. I know he wants to start, right? Like, that, those reports are out there, and I don't think that there's space for him to start. I think he has to come off the bench, just given, you know, the roster as it is. I mean, Kyle Lowry is going to start. I think you need Strus just because of his defense. I think he's going to wind up being the starter. So is there
I think you said a key word there.
Well, the defense, defense is better.
That's what it is. That's what it is for Hero. If he's going to start, he's got to at least not be the negative guy that everybody's going to go after. You know, there's a Philly game from a while back where they went after him after possession. And then as soon as they got the switch they want, the matchup they want, boom, they go and attack. And it's him getting cooked by Maxey, him getting cooked by Tobias Harris and things like that. Like, that's the problem. That's why they have a hard issue starting him.
He kind of looks at it like
the Yurtseven thing. Go ahead.
He kind of looks at it like he's Trae Young. I think he's thinking, I want to become such a dominant offensive hub, and you need to give me that opportunity to do it, that my defense won't really matter.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you guys. Is the Yurtseven Bam pairing that you know, we saw a little bit of in the practice or whatever, you guys think that has something to do with trying to make Tyler Hero more playable? To get two bigs back there? I mean, we know that the league has shifted where bigs matter again. Do you guys think that the Yurtseven Bam pairing has a lot to do with Tyler Hero?
It has a lot to do with PJ Tucker not being there and them not getting a power forward.
They need somebody, and the thing is, it's who's it going to be? They drafted a guy who in Jovic, who you're definitely not going to see start for them. That's not how Spo rose. Caleb Martin, he's bulked up. He was basically PJ Tucker's backup. He's the like size. Obviously, he doesn't have PJ's bulk and experience, but he's the like size guy if you wanted to go that route. But a lot of that would depend on Jimmy, because then you'd be really aggressive at switching everything. If you go big, which is what Miami did most of the regular season that they went to the finals, people don't remember the regular season because they weren't one of the better teams in the East. They were just a good team in the East. They started Myers Leonard for 49 games. That's, you know what I mean? They started Myers Leonard for 49 games and found room for Kelly Olynyk to play darn near 20 minutes a game. So, and Yurtseven's got some talent. He's got Myers Leonard type size. He's got a little bit of skill. But if you're going to play that big, you know, with Adebayo and say someone like Yurtseven, you need to be more aggressive on the perimeter. And Spo's always been a forced turnover kind of defense. Tyler Hero can do that. He's just got to apply it. And again, that's what this month is for, to figure out if he can be that guy.
It makes you wonder if, because obviously Yurtseven's out there because he can stretch to the corners and he can rebound. So it makes you wonder if they would start putting Bam in more of the positions that Tucker was in and get him defending bigger wings out on the perimeter.
It's going to be fascinating, but I'll tell you, the coach I trust to figure this out is Spo.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
I don't know if it, and when I mean figure it out, I don't know if this team is going to be as good as they were last year, but I still think he finds a way to get the best out of them. And this is also an organization that develops talent better than most and always finds these guys. You know, look, Max Strus was floating around for a while, then found a home. It's you know, Gabe Vincent's another guy. He's on, you know, they develop these guys. Like there could be a guy in the wings we haven't even heard of. And, you know, in December, we're going to be like, who the hell is this guy? Hey.
I think the biggest story for Miami this season is going to be Bam Adebayo. I think it's about his development, right? Like Bam is the piece that they need to actually take a leap to get to the next level offensively.
It's not even development. It's just aggression.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, we talk a lot about Ayton playing with force and maybe not enough about Bam playing with that kind of force.
It's just shoot. Just get shots, dude.
But he's not a good shooter.
He's not as bad a shooter as he sometimes makes out to be. Okay. Shout out to the skills competition.
But also just don't pass up on stuff.
It was pretty clear in the postseason, at least against Boston, the conference finals, he doesn't really have like a couple finishing moves he feels pretty confident getting to. He's trying to take different types of contested shots, force through hook shots. Like he needs to have at least some sort of bag where it at least creates separation as opposed to him just forcing his way through to the defender, which is what it feels like he's still relying on more than we would expect at this point.
He's another guy who is younger than we think he is. You know, Bam is what, 25 now? And so he's got so much ability with the ball, and there's so much talent around him that, to you guys' point, it's like he gets to the free throw line in the regular season, and the playoffs, he has these games where it's like he's great one game, and then you got to wait a week to see it again. And I can see him clicking this year, you know? And to y'all point about the Heat development process, there's two sides to that. You got guys that you bring into camp undrafted and all of a sudden they're a rotation player, but it also means you can find a way to flip guys and upgrade your talent. That's also what we saw 2 years ago. We saw a team that was starting Myers freaking Leonard for crying out loud for half the year. And then all of a sudden they get Andre Iguodala and Jay Crowder in the same transaction. So with a lot of these teams, again, you just paid Tyler Hero. I remember the Heat paid Justice Winslow, and Justice Winslow didn't progress after that, and he was involved in that Crowder Iguodala trade. I'm not saying Hero is going to be the guy on the trading block, but with a lot of these teams starting the year with certain holes, you look at how they want to address those holes in a training camp environment, and then you see them make a more significant move that speaks to how they're going to play in the postseason a couple months later.
Yeah, and Jay Crowder probably would love to go back to Miami. Just, you know, I think he's available.
Boss man back in Miami.
Stuff that Miami has.
Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training just in time for summer and warmer days. I know I'm looking outside right now. Sun's out, birds are chirping. It's time to start getting outside. I know that I like to get outside and play basketball with my kids, and honestly, I need to get into a fitness routine in order to keep up with these guys. And Peloton is there for me. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. Personalize your workout, whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class, or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance. Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals. Peloton's classes were made to challenge you. There are a variety of classes like boot camps, boxing, full body strength, or marathon training, all created to grow your skills or push you to improve in what you're already excelling in. Peloton's program and instruction push you to be your best. Their expert coaches and nonstop vibes will push you to new levels of strength and endurance, keeping you on your toes while giving you the professional coaching you need. Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Whether you prefer to run indoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has something for you. Get your head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
All right, let's get to the biggest news in the NBA right now is that NBA basketball is back in Seattle. Just not for the Sonics. It's Portland and the Clippers in Seattle. Law Murray covers the Clippers. We're going straight to you on this. Kawhi Leonard, he will be on the court again. I don't remember what that looks like. What do you expect to see?
Well, it's going to be an event Monday night in Seattle. It's not just Kawhi coming back. Obviously, he's the headliner as a two-time finals MVP who hasn't played since the 2021 postseason. Obviously, we've all seen how jacked he looks. The shot, I expect to be fine. The handle, I expect to be fine. He's going to be playing with more talent than the last Clippers team he left, which is saying a lot because that Clippers team made it to the conference finals. But it's also John Wall coming back, a guy who's new to the Clippers organization, a guy who didn't play last year, but not because of injury, but because he was just with the wrong organization at the wrong time. And everything that John has spoken of as far as not just a comeback to playing, but a comeback from all the things he's had to deal with mentally and emotionally as well. That's intriguing because they played their preseason opener Friday night in Seattle against a team from the Israeli National League. But those guys didn't play. So this is going to be the first look at a Clippers team that a lot of people are expecting big things out of. And then you're talking about the Blazers as well. They're playing their preseason opener. I would imagine that Damian Lillard is not coming up to Seattle to, you know, watch his backups play. He hasn't played since New Year's Eve. Okay. After the abdominal surgery, he just signed a new contract. So it's going to be a major event. And it's great that the city of Seattle gets to showcase that if they can have an event like this, if they can have NBA basketball, legitimate NBA basketball, even if it's preseason, that they're going to be in the lead for when the league is ready, for when Adam Silver is ready. Let's just be real, for some serious expansion talks. There's only been one team to join the league in the last quarter century. And we've seen through last year with more than 600 players playing that the league can probably handle some more players. So it's going to be interesting to see what the fallout from Monday night looks like.
The biggest thing is that league can handle the extra cash. I mean, two new teams could be like $6 billion worth of cash. And that's a good thing for the league, but also two extra teams, man, you could really like figure out a way to balance the schedule out. There's just so many reasons for it. The rise of the G League, the Adelaide 36ers being able to compete against an NBA team. Like, these are all good signs for the growth of the game and the strength of the game, and arguments in favor of adding two more teams. How is the arena, man? Climate Pledge Arena. I've seen it from Storm games, and I think I've seen it from some other stuff, but I mean, how did it feel in there the other night for, you know,
yeah, NBA. Well, last year was the first year that the NHL came back to Seattle. They had the Seattle Kraken. So that's when the arena opened. Obviously, the Storm played there this summer. And just being there Friday night, I mean, it's just really cool. Like, they have two scoreboards on different sides of the playing floor. They have this window that I don't know what direction the window is, but it's just really beautiful to look at during the day. For all those who like matinee games, I don't think that's as much of a factor for night games, obviously, but it's just really nice inside the playing area. And then there's the locker rooms. There's the area there where obviously players would be spending most of their time, you know, when they're not on the floor during the game. I mean, it just looks like a good building. I got to go to NBA buildings across country for the first time in my career last year. And I mean, Climate Pledge, it's not like I saw the old Key Arena, but Climate Pledge, it fits in. It looks, there's not a place where you're like, oh, they're not, this doesn't look right. It doesn't look like a ready, like they're ready for a team. It's just the NBA's got to be ready.
Should have never left.
They should have never left.
Let's just stop with that. Like, it's just at the end of the day, let's just be honest. Seattle should have always had a team. Sorry, Oklahoma City. They should have never left at the end of the day, like when we're looking at it. And the league needs to have it. I think they're going to be the front of the line whenever the league does do expansion. I think it's just a no-brainer. The fan base is there to support it. And, you know, we've seen it. Should have never left in the first place. Got to bring it back whenever they do. I think we're all kind of just expecting it to happen sooner than not.
And if they do Climate Pledge Arena, it's not like they have to invest a ton of, you know, development money. There's already businesses there. There are restaurants. There are museums. There's everything already there. It's all there. The infrastructure's there.
You're looking at the Space Needle when you get in there. It's the coolest thing.
Literally, yeah. It's amazing. Yeah. Really good pub around the corner, too, if you get
time. I think we can all agree there'll be a team in Seattle and Vegas within the next. But before LeBron James retires in 2029, I'm sure we'll have those teams set up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Bryce will be the star of that one. Mo, let's talk about the actual Clippers here. They have 500 players that should be the rotation. We saw Luke Kennard looked really good in their opener against a second division Israeli team. So maybe we'll take it with a grain of salt. Jason Preston, starting point guard. Does he start? I mean, there's a lot of questions that they have to answer here, probably more than any other team in the league.
They have the best questions to answer than any team in the league. When it's all crap, we have so much talent coming out of every orifices of our body. We don't know what to do with. That's a good problem to have. It's funny. It's all of that. And they just have one legitimate center on the roster, you know, who's actually played regular minutes and Ivica Zubac. But like, I think you're looking at it. I think they're deep. They got a lot of guys. They can play different ways. It's a blessing and a curse in the way that Ty Lue can probably go with a million different rotations, matchups, whatever, and lineups and things like that. So it's trying to figure out the right mix at this point. And I think that's just going to be the process. And there's going to be some good guys that are probably not going to get minutes, you know, and I think there's interesting opportunities, you know, for them to say, okay, well, if we do need to upgrade our roster, we can make a move here and there. And I mean, Law, you know more about it than me, man.
I mean, I've got them, Law, you tell me if I'm way off here. I have them as a consolidation team. I think that approaching the deadline, like they have the pieces and they own the wing. They did the OKC draft pick strategy for wings. And they just got all of these playable wings and they have all of these guys that need minutes and they've got young guys that could use minutes. I think that they're a team that come trade deadline, they're going to be able to go out and say, oh, okay, this team, okay, I like that piece you've got there. Which of our two young wings would you like to develop for the next couple seasons? You know what I mean? I do think that that's going to be on the table for them. You think that that might be a strategy for them?
I think Lawrence Frank always makes a move. It would be news if the trade deadline in February passes without the Clippers making a trade, because they make a trade every single year. Last year it was Norm Powell. The year before they shipped Lou Williams out for Rondo because they think that was going to be the, you know, solution to the point guard issue. The year before they got Marcus Morris, like I said earlier on this show. So, they also have a trade exception that is like $9-10 million, something like that, because of the Ibaka trade that they made last year at the deadline. It'll be news if Lawrence Frank sits on all of that. But I can see a scenario where they don't make a trade because, one, these are the Clippers. Shit always happens to these dudes, you know? So the depth is kind of necessary. Like, we all know Kawhi is going to miss at least 15 games this year because that's how many back-to-backs they have. Paul is a guy who has missed double digit games every year as a Clipper. John is not a guy I would look at as someone who's going to play every night. So those young guys that might not play on a full roster are going to be asked to be ready at a moment's notice because of how they're going to manage the older players on this team, the stars on this team. But to your point specifically, Dave, they got a couple guys in Marcus Morris, Luke Kennard, who those guys are really good players, really good shooters, good assets, obviously could help a lot of teams. And if they feel like there's a player out there that more acutely addresses their chances of contending, then they're going to get calls and we're going to take this up to the deadline.
Right, the Los Angeles Clippers. Will Ty Lue remember that he has Norm Powell? Find out this NBA season. He's Mo DeKeel, Dave Dufour, Law Murray. I'm Jared Weiss. Jade Hoy made us sound like we know what we're doing. This is the Basketball Buzz on the Athletic NBA Show.